Back in on the Gabe Kuhn Show, 92.9 FM, ESPN. And joining me now is Chip Williams Jr. on X at Chip Williams Jr. Basketball talent identification. He put out his big board. He's a set head as well. He's a big fan of Cedric Howard. But Chip, how's it going, man?
Man, I'm doing great. I appreciate you having me on again. Always great to talk to you.
Absolutely. Absolutely. This is that time of year for you. Now, you are a set head. You're a big Cedric Howard fan. He was picked by the Grizzlies at number 11. They traded up to that Blazers spot to make sure that they could take the swing on him. Tell me about him and what you think of his fit with this Memphis Grizzlies team.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, Cedric was a guy who started to pop up kind of on some deep cut draft Twitter stuff maybe in 18 months ago or so when he was at Eastern Washington. Is like, could this be a guy one day that maybe, you know, is like a second round pick, something kind of interesting at a small school, right? And then, you know, he played the next season at Eastern Washington. He was fantastic. Transfers up to Washington State, has a tremendous first six games with them. And then, obviously, as everyone knows, he got the shoulder injury, ended up having to shut it down for the season. So from that aspect, in terms of like scouting him, that was tough because there's just not a ton of high major data points on Cedric Howard right now, because he played D3, Eastern Washington, and then the six Washington State games, mostly against lower-level competition. But when you start to dig into this guy, there's a lot to like. First of all, like, you can just pop on any highlight package of him, and you can see the jumper is exactly how you want anyone to shoot the ball. Like, if you were trying to teach your son to shoot the basketball, you'd pop on Cedric Howard tape and say, hey, mimic this as best as you can. And that's a big deal because guys with his length, so he's got the 7'2 wingspan, he's 6'5 barefoot. Sometimes when, like, off the top of my head, I'm thinking of, like, Mikal Bridges. Like, his shot is just a little funky. Sometimes these guys with long arms, it's not always fluid. Sometimes there's a hitch in it. There's nothing with this guy's stuff. Mm-hmm. And then you dig a little bit deeper and you look at the shooting numbers and what this guy was able to produce. And the indicators are elite. So we've got elite mechanics and elite indicators. Like, okay, check. This guy can definitely shoot the ball. And then you know, kind of mention his body, 6'5", 7'2", wingspan, probably closer to 6'6", 6'6.5", when he's got basketball shoes on. That gives you a pretty high floor defensively, too. I think he's a little raw on that end. He's got some stuff he's got to clean up. Some of the, like, steel block indicators are pretty middling. They're nothing to jump off the screen at. But, like, that's a great baseline to work with because I think the jumper is going to allow him to get on the floor early on and earn him some minutes where he can start to work through some of these kinks that he's got in his game.
So obviously the Grizzlies need shooting. He can provide that, but it's not just from the three-point line. You put this out there. In his time with Eastern Washington and Washington State in Division I, 51 for 87 from two, so 58.6%. What can you tell me about his creation outside of the three-point shooting?
Definitely. So that's actually on non-rim too. So that's just stuff like a floater, something, you know, pull up from the free throw line. So that is, to be frank with you, that is in a ridiculously high number. Anytime a guy is like 35 to 40% on non-rim twos, that means his touch is really good. So we're talking to something that is almost 60% from that area. It's frankly unbelievable. But I think he's got a little ways to go with his dribble, but he's got this kind of craft that I just think is innate in some guys that you can't really teach, where when a guy tries to swipe at the ball, he'll quickly turn to kind of a back down area. And then he's just got this crafty footwork where he can finish around guys and get to an open floater or get to his spot on the floor. Obviously, we know that's so big in the NBA, where guys can kind of just put their head down, dribble to a spot on the floor, and just pull up without having to look at the rim because they've repped it so many times. I think Howard has got that potential. And then getting to the rim, he's a pretty nuanced finisher. Like, he's not a guy that has to have a clean path to the basket or a clean rim attempt in order to finish. He finishes everything. I think that, you know, the Coach David Thorpe, Henry Abbott article was going around last night that mentioned he was around 72% at the rim in D1, which, again, absurd. Like, right. That's better than what Zach Edey did at Purdue. I mean, this stuff it's bananas. Like, you just don't see numbers like this from a big, let alone a 6'5 wing. So it's incredible. Like, I think that from day one, we feel good about the shooting. but there's so much other stuff that you can build on here that, like, I don't want to put a ceiling on what he can right. become, because I'm afraid that he's going to make me look stupid, you know, 3-4 years from now.
All right, now clear this up, because you get a lot of this. I remember when Zaire Williams was drafted, you got a lot of this. And, you know, if the Grizzlies just stood pat and you know, had their original pick, they would have been able to get that guy. But they trade up from 16 to 11. Had the Grizzlies stood pat, in your estimation, would he have made it there? Obviously, we can only go off reports and intel that we get from other sources. But do you think he would have made it to 16 had the Grizzlies just stood there?
No doubt. Like, I'm not really an intel guy. I hear a couple things, but I have zero intel on this. So what I would do is just kind of deduce it from reason, right? Look at the teams that the Grizzlies had to jump in order to get there, specifically the San Antonio Spurs and the Oklahoma City Thunder at picks 14 and 15. Those are two very smart organizations who the Grizzlies are generally swimming in that same pool, trying to get the same guys that are targets of OKC and San Antonio. So the fact that they leapt over those two without having to give up any of their own first-round picks, to me, I consider it a win. You've got these extra picks. You might as well use them when you've got a conviction about a guy. Especially, like, when I put my board out, I list these guys out, I rank them, right? 1 through 75. This year, I threw a 76 guy on there. But what's more important to me than the ranking is the tiers that I put these guys in. And to me, those tiers are very fluid. I'm comfortable taking those guys anywhere in that tier. So if I was guessing, Zach Kleiman and his staff, they had a tier break after Cedric Coward that, okay, the draft is really going to drop off for them in their perspective if they do not go up and get Cedric Coward and let someone else select him. So, like, you know, you played football. I'm confident mm-hmm. that you watch the NFL draft a lot. I would say that, like, as a fan of a football team, in general, I'm pro trade back because there's so many picks and you get much more darts to throw at the board, right? In basketball, it's the opposite. One guy can change what you do on a court so much that if you have conviction about him, you need to do what it takes to go get him. And if you're wrong, you're wrong. It is what it is, right? Mm-hmm. But I appreciate going up and getting your guy when you feel like there's going to be a significant drop off after him.
Mm-hmm. Now, there's a viral list going around right now, and I'm sure you know about it, you've seen it, but wings with a 7'2" wingspan or more taken in the first round, and of course, Cedric Coward fits that. But the list: Pascal Siakam, OG Anunoby, Mikal Bridges, PJ Washington, Rui, Scotty Barnes, Jalen Williams, Tari Eason, and the last two we'll see, but they certainly have some things they can grow with, and then their development is still pending. But Bilal Coulibaly and Jairus Walker. In your opinion, why do you think that type of player pans out more often than not?
I just think, like, so one kind of, you know, thing that's accepted in the draft Twitter world is that height and length are the margin of error separators in the game of basketball. Anytime, you know, you have two guys of equal skill or close skill, give me the longer guy, give me the taller guy. Give me the guy who, you know, it's a game of inches, right? Give me the guy that's got the extra half inch on his wingspan to get a deflection or to grab a rebound. It also allows you so much positional versatility defensively. Like, I could see Cedric Coward guarding ones, twos, threes, and even some smaller fours as his frame continues to fill out. So it creates so many avenues and opens up paths for you to get on the court early on. And those reps are invaluable for a young player, especially a guy like Cedric Coward, who, like we mentioned, has not had a ton of high major reps. So, like, having that, it again, just opens up the path and opens up the possibility to more playing time when you are versatile and can, you know, utilize your length to your advantage.
Mm-hmm, no doubt. Now, Grizzlies situation. They trade Desmond Bane. Seemingly, they've gotten younger with Cedric Coward. You have a rookie now that you think very highly of. They're not going to be as good as they were a year ago in theory. They're sort of retooling. They're in the process of doing so. What do you think next year's plan ultimately is? In other words, like, what do you think next year looks like, and what do you think Zach Kleiman is looking for in next year's team?
It's a great question, and I don't want to dodge your question, but I think what I will say is that I think Zach Kleiman and his staff, his front office staff, realized that there was a ceiling on Ja, Jaren, and Des, And I don't know for sure that they were actively shopping Desmond Bane, but what I can tell you is that they basically got paid 125 cents on the dollar to send Desmond Bane to Orlando, right? Mm-hmm. At the end of the day, that's just good asset management. And what that does, that now gives them ammunition to change the roster construction around Ja and Jaren. And frankly, I would throw Zach Edey in there because I think he's going to be very important to what Tomas Isolo wants to do with his pick-and-roll heavy system. So I think that they just decided, look, there's a ceiling with Ja and Dez as your backcourt duo. Doesn't mean that both of them aren't fantastic, but it does create some problems just with Dez being, you know, 6'5 with a 6'5 wingspan. It's going to be difficult for him to guard even someone as big as like a Tobias Harris or something like that, right? Like, there is an element of that, which, again, why Cedric Tauert having that wingspan is such a plus for the Grizzlies. So I expect there to be quite a bit more movement. If I'm just guessing here, Cole Anthony was acquired to flip him at some point for a different type of player, and you also have several picks that you can use to upgrade that position. Mm-hmm. If you look at who his contract can fit, it's a lot of names that make sense for the Grizzlies. So I expect them to continue to compete for a playoff position. But I do think it's fair as of right now, you know, before any sort of free agent transactions happen, that they probably will be a marginal step backwards. But we'll have to see. Like, if they end up flipping Cole Anthony for, say, a P.J. Washington out of Dallas and one of those Orlando firsts or two of them, then we may have to have another conversation because, frankly, I buy Kentavious Caldwell-Pope as a very real right. starter and contributor for the Grizzlies. And so I also think they looked at this as, all right, Dez, we love him. He brings a lot to the table. But the way that Tomas Isolo wants to play, a lot of pick and roll and a lot of creation off the dribble to set other guys up. Dez occasionally does struggle with his handle, right? We saw it in the Oklahoma City series. And so I think they thought that they could essentially replace what they were going to ask Desmond Bane to do at a much lower cost than what they were paying Desmond Bane. So it's not a knock on Bane. I think they just had a realization that they can retool and upgrade other parts of the roster while not really losing a ton of the production that they were going to ask Bane to do moving forward.
Mm-hmm. Now, this isn't more of an observation, but I know you can speak on it as well, especially after watching these NBA finals and looking at the rookie scale deals that were on both sides and how impactful they were. But you almost like rewind back to exit interviews with, you know, Zach Kleiman saying, you know, we unintentionally doubled and tripled down on youth. And obviously the Desmond Bane trade happens between when he said that and now. And like you rewind to that and you almost wish he didn't say it, because in the end of the day, you look at the value that these rookie scale deals have. And it feels like the fan base has this warped view because of what Zach Kleiman said at exit interviews. But looking at what happened in these NBA playoffs and the two teams, the Pacers and the Thunder, playing each other in those NBA finals, how important are these rookie scale deals? And can you sort of let my listeners in on that when it comes to roster construction and roster building?
Yeah, they're incredibly important. And the number one reason is the new way that the collective bargaining agreement has forced teams to build their rosters. Going up into the first apron and the second apron is so punitive that you have to find cheap rotation players. And even better, if you can draft them and have them under control for, you know, 4 years in the case of a first-round pick, 3 years in case of a second-round pick. These things are so – you no longer can you just go out and have five guys making $25 million a year or more because that bill is going to come due. I mean, look at a team like the Boston Celtics.
Right.
They got their title, but they are now in the process of stripping down all the expensive old pieces that they have. And to be frank, Brad Stevens has done a phenomenal job of really not having to pay too much to get off that. But that is the reality. Like, it's not just the Grizzlies. It's everyone in the NBA. It's Boston. It's these larger markets that when the bill comes due, some hard decisions are going to have to be made. So a team, you know, look, Zach Kleiman and his staff, they are not infallible. They're not perfect. They have missed on picks. But in general, they have hit on picks as well or better than really any other team in the NBA over the span of his time. especially considering where they've picked. They got very good very quickly. So most of his picks are coming in the 20s and in the second round. And the hit rate on those, I mean, you could just go back, just tell your listeners to look on Wikipedia and scroll through five or six drafts. It's pretty bleak when you start getting into the 20s and in the second round. So the fact that he's hitting on as many as he has is so, so vital when you're already paying Jaren, or about to have to pay Jaren even more, and already paying Ja Morant a max contract. So I understand the frustration of, hey, we need vets, this team is so young. But hitting on these picks is a good thing that is going to allow the Grizzlies to retain the most amount of talent that they possibly can.
All right, now I need you to cook here, Chip. We have 48 and 56 to look forward to tonight for the Memphis Grizzlies in the second round. Second round gets going at 7 o'clock. We'll carry it right here for people listening out there, right here on 92.9 FM ESPN. But 48 and 56, what can you tell me about the value out there tonight, and what players do you like as, you know, potential difference makers in the second round?
Definitely. I mean, look, this is when we start getting deep in the draft, this is my favorite. I get a little tingle and I'm ready to go. And I guess Zach Kleiman's the same way, because that guy does some of his best work in the second round. So I thought there was a lot of talent that fell. Four names I'll give you off the top of my head that I would have very comfortably taken in the first round. Adu Thiero from Arkansas. I think his is medical related, and that's probably why he slipped. But Rashear Fleming and Noah Penda specifically are two guys that I would have taken at 16 and been perfectly happy with. And then there's Ryan Kalkbrenner, the Giant center from Creighton, who I was very surprised slipped out of the first round. So, you know, maybe not Kalkbrenner just because you already have Edie, although, you know, it does make sense with the fact that Edie is going to be out for, you know, a good chunk of the beginning of the season. But, you know, just kind of going down, I think this is kind of where you get to all these prospects are going to be flawed in some way, right? If they were really good, or if they were flawless, they would have been picked in the first round. So you kind of have to squint sometimes to see an NBA player. But there's a guy, like a shooter from Kentucky named Kobe Brea, who he is up there with Con Knipple for the best shooter in this class, in my opinion. Jameer Watkins from Florida State is a long wing, someone that reminds me of like a Vince Williams-type mold that – we know Kleiman and those guys have been into in the past. And then, like, let's say that they just want to stash a guy. Like, they don't want to use a roster spot and they just want to retain draft rights. There is a ginormous center from Australia by the name of Rocco Zakarski, who measured 7'3" with a 7'5" wingspan. He is an incredible mover for his age. He played in the NBL, which is New Zealand and Australia's league. Very talented league, very competitive league. He did not get too many reps, so his draft stock really fell. He was pretty much a consensus lottery pick coming into this year. Didn't play a whole lot, but I could see the Grizzlies going that stash route, which they've done before. And he's a really interesting one of just betting on, you know, a giant who moves very well and is already a pretty good rim protector. So, I mean, look, I don't want to bore your listeners. I could name 25 guys that really get me excited, but I'm going to cut myself off there. All right.
Yeah, now, I do have a question, though, regarding one of the names you brought up, Rashear Fleming. Like, most people thought this would be a first-round guy. What are we missing with him? Because I look at, like, his measurements and what he's able to do from three. 6'9" with a 7'5" wingspan, sort of a 3-and-D-type wing, shot 39% from three, nearly 70% from the rim. After last night, and obviously Jay Billis was all over it. Like, it was sort of the Mel Kiper Jr. Shedeur Sanders from the 2025 NFL draft. But what in your, like, is there something we're missing? Or are you in the same boat as me and the rest of us?
No, I'm with you. Like, he's one of the guys I mentioned. Like, if they took him at 16, you and I are talking today about how much I really like Rashear Fleming. My guess is the big thing is two things. One, he is just not a dribbler right now. He is basically a play finisher exclusively, whether that is spotting up for three or finishing something around the rim. So he's got some work to do on his handle. And then he doesn't really draw fouls, which is kind of a weird thing. But, like, that's always a good indicator of just general aggressiveness and strength and ability to beat your man. And so those two things combined really signal that, hey, this guy's got some work to do before you feel comfortable him creating his own shot in any real way. But I wrote something on Medium and basically just said, look, at the end of the day, if Rashear Fleming he had 173 rim attempts and 159 three-point attempts. And if he gets to the NBA at 6'8 with a 7'5 wingspan and all he does is dunk and shoot threes and be gigantic, he is going to make a ton of money playing the game of basketball. So I don't get it. I do not understand why he slipped out of the first round, and I expect him to be one of the first two or three picks in the second round.
All right. Now, I know a lot of teams did good work last night. I think the Grizzlies did good work, but there was one team in particular I already talked about before I even got you on the show, but it's the New Orleans Pelicans. Move up 10 spots for an unprotected 2026 pick, and they get Cedric Coward at number 13 to pair with Zion and DeJounte Murray off injury, all that. What's going on in New Orleans? Truthfully, like what's their mindset? Do they think they're going to be a top six protected seed? Do they think that they're going to compete? Because, you know, common sense, common knowledge tells you they're going to be at the bottom of the Western Conference, regardless of who they got in this draft. But I don't even understand the fit, much less what they gave up to bring in Derek Queen, who I like. I want to be very clear about that. But the fit doesn't make sense to me, plus giving up a unprotected first-round pick to the Hawks in a draft that next year that is, quite frankly, just as we sit here right now, looks pretty dang good.
Yeah, it's brutal, man. I'm not going to come on here and defend that at all. I like Derek Queen. I'm right there with you. Had he ended up a Grizzly, I'd be very excited. There's a lot of questions about Queen, though. I think he has some, like, star offensive outcomes just because he is wizard-like with the ball in his hands, whether it's scoring or passing. But, man, when you already have a non-shooter in Zion, right now Derek Queen is a non-shooter, and it's a big question whether he ever gets there. I don't think either one of them can play center. So now you're talking about two non-shooters who don't play center, and you're paying one of them a max contract already,
right?
And you gave up an unprotected pick for next year. Like you mentioned, I think there is as many as four guys in next year's draft who could be of the tier of Cooper Flagg. It is one that you want to hang on. If you have any inclination that you may miss the playoffs, you want to hold on to that pick for dear life. And trading that for Derek Queen, as much as I enjoy Derek Queen, is just not what I would have done.
Non-shooting point forward mixed with a non-shooting point center is basically like the layman's terms of how I put it earlier. I just don't – it just doesn't make sense. And I'll say this. Joe Dumars, I think that he just took over as their personnel guy, and he was with the NBA for years handing out suspensions. So I always wondered how that was going to play within a locker room and within a roster. But he has completely embarrassed himself with his first couple moves with the New Orleans Pelicans.
It's bad. And you go back and look at before he was with the league office, he was running a team and the Pistons, and it did not go well at all. And so I was frankly stunned that he got another general manager opportunity. And I think we're seeing early on exactly why, you know, he was not running a team and was handing out suspensions in the league office. So just wild, wild stuff. I hate it for our neighbors down south in New Orleans.
Well, they're in the division, so they play the Grizzlies four times a year. So I think we can accept that. But on the other side, I did give some credit. The Hawks. Impressive stuff what they've done. Just sort of take a nice little swing at KP, Kristaps Porzingis for nothing, and then they end up with a really good pick next year.
Yeah, no doubt. Look, Porzingis, they basically got a free roll of the dice at that one. This is actually really good. I think you can tie this back to the Grizzlies somewhat. The Hawks made these runs with Trae Young early in his career, right? They get all the way to the Eastern Conference Finals, and they kind of feel like they start to hit their head on their ceiling. So they don't do anything crazy in terms of trading Trae and completely blowing it up. They just slowly start to retool around Trae Young. And you see, like, Jalen Johnson really came on last year. Risa Shea, I was not the world's biggest fan of as a number one pick, but I like him as a complimentary player next to Trae Young. Now you get Kristaps Porzingis, if he can get over this illness that he's got, or you know, whatever's going on there is kind of strange. But, you know, I kind of think that they are starting to build a team that makes a lot of sense around Trae Young, and they've done it in just a couple seasons. And, of course, tying it back to New Orleans, they were basically able to steal Dyson Daniels from them in that deal that sent DeJounte Murray to New Orleans. And he was phenomenal all season long. And you talk about a guy who can cover up all of Trey's defensive deficiencies. Like, Dyson will guard three guys if you need him to. He's unbelievable. So, yeah, and the Hawks have had a really, really good offseason. They've got a new general manager in there. Thankfully, it's not Joe Dumars, and they're doing a lot better than our guys in New Orleans.
No doubt. Well, Chip, I appreciate it as always. Enjoy the draft tonight, and we'll be following along with your Twitter.
You're the man, Gabe. I appreciate it.
Yes, sir. He is Chip Williams, at Chip Williams Jr. on Twitter. Go follow along with him. But we need to go ahead and pass you off. We'll go ahead and pass you off straight from Chip into the second round of the 2025 NBA Draft. ESPN's coverage is next. We'll talk to you tomorrow.